Time to talk some basketball with Kevin McPherson. We're here on Halftime, ESPN Arkansas, and HitThatLine.com. Kevin, you hear the song we brought you back from, and I don't remember who. You know, I was telling Ty Richardson, who makes our comebacks and our co-host and studio producer, that the original song there was by Curtis Blow. That's my favorite basketball song, is by Curtis Blow. You remember that one, right?
Sure. I anything basketball-related, and I'm middle-aged, I put that stuff in the bank, so Try to keep it in my mind, and if White Men Can't Jump comes on at any point on cable somewhere, even with commercials, I'll watch it. It doesn't matter what else.
Let's go. Great movie.
Right there with you for that, no doubt about it. So it's a weird week because you had three games last week for the Arkansas men's team. Nothing this week until Saturday. So they talked a lot about, the conditioning that they go through. And the fact that the three games last week, you'd be leaning heavily on that conditioning. The Sunday game against Indiana really pushed them to the limit. It was a great game. And then the two games after against Montana State and then against UT Arlington. I don't know if you could say you were pushed to the limit, but what do you think you learned about Arkansas basketball last week that you can take into this week without any games?
Well, I think we learned that what we saw against Texas was not an anomaly. That was a game where it was a grinding game, a defensive game. Arkansas's defense, once they started mixing in that 2-3 zone, really became tough to score against. But that's one game, and I think in this last week, even though it's still early in the year, you look at a team like Indiana that came in a blistering 58% from the field, over 70% on two-point shots. Arkansas held that team in check. Indiana's the only team so far that has shot over 40% from the field against the Razorbacks. And you look at the three-point shooting defense, it's under 30%. So I think when you look at it in three games in 6 days, Arkansas takes care of business, and you start looking at the defensive end. I think it's the first time under Mike Anderson where defense is really the calling card. The fastest 40, born out of 40 minutes of hell, and you always think of the defense and up-tempo basketball thriving off of the defense. But it's really been about offensive efficiency the first 7 years under Mike Anderson, his better teams. Now it's defense, and I think that's the calling card. And this last week, I think they kind of, again, five games into the season, we'll see. And the SEC is going to be different challenges. But so far, so good on that end of the floor.
It's got to say a lot about maybe not the coaching job by Mike at this point of the year, but the kids that they've brought into the program. Because if you're going to be a good defensive team, a lot of times that's all about buy-in. And I think for a team that has such a talented paint defender and shot blocker like Daniel Gafford, if you don't buy in, it would be really easy for the other four on the court to be lazy and expect that if they get beaten defensively, that Gafford's there to save them. When you look, you mentioned the shooting percentage from behind the three-point line. It's under 30%. It's not just Gafford. This is a team-wide thing, and it is about buy-in sometimes, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's a combination of both. I think Mike Anderson with a new canvas and basically a brand-new backcourt, you guys want to play minutes, and maybe when they don't come in out of the junior college, as one of the top players in junior college putting up all kinds of scoring numbers, maybe with freshmen it's a little different too because, hey, you're all going to get a shot here, but you're going to have to play at this end. And conveniently, I say that I think he's recruited well for guys that can play defense in this system. You look out in the backcourt, you've got 6'5", 6'5", and Isaiah Jones, Mason Jones, and then even Jalen Harris at 6'2", is kind of a long and rangy guy, and he gets off the floor. And all of these guys are tough. They get a lot of deflections. They take charges, and you see a guy like Mason Jones second on the team in rebounding. He's going in there and sticking his nose in there and doing the dirty work. And Isaiah Joe, what can I say about him? Fourth in the SEC in steals, leads the Hogs there, but he gets a lot of deflections that lead to loose ball rebounds, or maybe someone else gets the steal. But you start looking at the little things these guys are doing around Daniel Gafford, and then even when they miss assignments, they recover so well. A lot of active hands. Guys that come over and help, Gabe Osaboyan, Reggie Cheney, Adriel Bailey, who's having his best season, probably the biggest surprise of anybody to me. But you start looking just down the line, even the reserves aren't playing heavy minutes. They come in and they contribute at that end of the floor. And so even though there may be some things with a young team that there's going to have some ups and downs, if you're playing right at that end of the floor, you're going to have a chance every night out.
Well, and I know in Mike's philosophy, and I see this with Mike Nabors too, and they'll tell you that that part of the offensive philosophy starts with defense and getting a stop. And, you know, the whole idea of fastest 40 is to make it 40 minutes of hell on both ends of the court, turning a missed shot or a turnover into an opportunity to score at the rim. And perhaps as the team is playing well defensively, and you even hear on the comments from Matt Zimmerman on the broadcast and occasionally from Coach Anderson, I'm not sure if they expect this to be a very good or even great offensive team, but they have an opportunity to turn their defense into offense, just like any Mike Anderson team can. Have you seen them with the ability to do that in these first few games?
Yeah, and if you look at fast break points, there really hasn't been a lot there. You go, well, wait a minute. They're getting turnovers. They're forcing turnovers. They look good at that end. They're holding teams down. What Arkansas has done a good job of is converting turnovers. Arkansas is in the top five in the SEC in defensive rebounds. And when you look at points off turnovers, they're way up there. And so even though they're not necessarily scoring in transition yet, and I think they're going to start doing more of that, they're converting, and they're converting a lot better than the opposition has so far when Arkansas turns the ball over. When I look at the offense, you know, we're used to Mike Anderson's teams being the top two or three in the league in scoring and three-point shooting percentage. Not so good there in those areas right now, middle of the pack or worse. But what they are, they're second in assist, and that tells me the ball's moving. It's going inside to Gafford. He's scoring at a high clip, leads the league in field goal percentage. You look at Adriel Bailey shooting over 64% from the field, and then the guards are finding ways to score. So when I look at the offensive end, I'm not as worried about that because how good they are defensively and in the right places on offense, if they're moving that ball and they're getting assists, that means they're okay on that end, even if the numbers aren't as high as what they normally are.
Kevin McPherson is our guest here on Halftime. You can follow him on Twitter at @ARHoopScoop. Kevin, looking back over Mike Anderson's teams here at Arkansas, there's two positions that stand out to me that are the weakest links. That's point guard and that's power forward. Now, I think you could say Michael Washington and Marshawn Powell were listed at forwards. They played more center along with Bobby Portis. Daniel Gafford is clearly a center, so you could possibly juxtapose those in there. I'm not going to do it for this purpose. Between those two positions, Kevin, which has been more inconsistent for Mike Anderson?
I think the most inconsistent for Mike Anderson has probably been, man, that's a toss-up. I would go with the power forward. I mean, really, he prefers guys that are versatile. You look, go back to Cody Clark and Landis Harris, guys that could score outside. Cody Clark did a good job around the basket, kind of a glue guy and a blue-collar guy, too. But since that time, I mean, they've run guys through there. You know, Ja'Cory Williams, who things didn't work out at Arkansas for him. You look at Dustin Thomas and Orlando Cook and some of the guys, Keaton Miles. I think that's been a big gap for them. And I think right now by committee, when you start looking at the start Adriel Bailey's had, you look at what Reggie Chaney, in only 14.2 minutes per game. This guy, if you stretch him out to per 40 minutes, his rebounding and block shots are the best on the team. He gets a lot of deflections. You look at Gabe. Gabe Osaboyne comes in about 12 minutes a game. Energy guy, takes charges, gets steals. I think right now, collectively, it's the best group defensively at that end, and there's enough offense to support Gafford right now. You see Bailey stepping out and more consistently knocking down that mid-range shot. When he gets fouled, he's making teams pay. 71% from the free throw line. On a poor free throw shooting team, Adriel Bailey on that front line is the one guy that's been consistent there. So I think the four spot, if you go back and look at the point guard, you can make an argument there too that's been the weakest. Jabril Durham, Ty Madden did some good stuff there, but I think those guys were good enough over the last 4 or 5 years when Arkansas was making NCAA tournament runs to say maybe that wasn't as big a weakness as that four spot.
Kevin, you walked right into my next question. You mentioned Adriel Bailey's improvement. 31% free throw shooter as a freshman, 60% as a sophomore, and then you mentioned he's a 71% free throw percentage shooter now. And then you look at his shooting outside the free throw line. He's shooting 70% from the two-pointer lane and then 64% from the field. He's taken a few threes this season. And that's kind of the direction I want to head with this. Arkansas has lacked a true power forward to complement the centers they've had under Mike Anderson. Do you think he can fill that role adequately?
Well, it's so early, but if you look at the contribution so far, he's doing things he hasn't done. If you look at his steals, he's second on the team in steals. He's a guy when I saw coming in, he gambles a lot, and on defense his first and second year, he'd make plays, but he'd get burned a lot. And I think now he's figured out how to not only contribute and put stuff that stat sheet in some areas like that hustle plays, but you see him also recovering really well on defense. He's a weak side shot blocker type, a guy that can really wreak havoc because at 6'6 and athletic, he's not your prototypical four, but Arkansas hasn't had this, even through five games, I don't think they've had this kind of scoring and overall input and efficiency. You just talked about the efficiency shooting. you combine all that, and it's really a shot in the arm, especially with the way Gafford's playing right now, to have somebody, a sidekick, you know, in that front, on that front line. And then I like, again, what Chaney and Osaboyn have done coming in on in that second unit.
Kevin, the net ratings came out for the first time yesterday. They're a little confusing, but they're supposed to mean a little bit more or a lot more than the RPI rankings did, or at least make more sense. Not sure if you could say that based on the first rankings, but, I mean, to me it would make sense that these rankings make sense in March when all of the games have been played and the reason that this computer model is being used. From your understanding of net versus RPI, do you think that the net rankings will be a better, more fair metric than the RPI rankings were?
That's a tough question. I think it's beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I liked RPI, but in some levels I didn't. There are things about net that I don't quite understand yet, or some of the stuff I don't necessarily agree with. You know, Arkansas's third in the SEC, which is supposed to be the best, one of the better conferences, and maybe even better than it was last year when it got eight teams into the tournament. But 53rd is only third best in the SEC right now, five games in for Arkansas. Most teams haven't played more than seven. So when I look at some of the metrics, a lot of that takes into account winning and losing margin. I don't know that that should matter in basketball for a variety of reasons. But for some reason, that's part of the calculation. And some of these, like KenPom ratings, Sagarin, some of these things that factor into that, you know, when I've looked at those in the past, sometimes I think they're way off and sometimes I think they're right on. So, like any kind of metric, you got to use, to me, the eyeball test when you're factoring that in is sometimes got to have more impact, you know, than the metrics. And so that's what I do. Now, the people on the selection committee, hopefully that they understand basketball and know what they're looking at when they're watching it, because I don't want them relying as much on the metrics as they do what they see.
That's the other thing, too. And we have to remember that these net ratings are not the end-all, be-all. I mean, it's not the top 64 or 68 in those ratings are the teams that go to the tournament. It still comes down to human decisions and people that know the game of basketball, theoretically, watching these games and going off of that and then going off of the ratings and a couple of other things, too. So maybe we're putting a little bit too much on the idea that these ratings are even around. It's just a tool for human beings to use to make decisions that affect the sport in March.
Yeah, and that's what it should be. I mean, it should just be part of, and not really what they're going to lean on to justify decisions. Now, that's going to factor into seeding and at-large bids. Obviously, it's going to play a role, but you just hope that the people that are actually putting eyes on these teams and you know, chopping all this up and coming to these decisions in March, you know, are going off what they see as much, if not more, than some of these metrics they're using.
Kevin McPherson's our guest. He's a columnist at Sporting Life Arkansas. Kevin, a few more questions before we get you out of here. So I don't know if you remember Keen Miles, but I heard all this hype about how Keen Miles, coming over from West Virginia, was going to do major things for the program, was going to be the next big guy for the program. The guy averaged 3-3 his senior year. I'm hearing the same type of spectacle, the same type of talk about Jordan Phillips. What can you tell me about Jordan Phillips, and is he going to contribute to this program this year?
Well, I think he will. You know, here's a guy that had a hip injury at the end of his high school season and missed extended time after surgery, recovering from that. Once he got into Arkansas system, you know, move on campus late May, start going through the workouts and different things, he was limited because he was still rehabbing from that. Once he was clear fully, he probably participated only for a week full go before he injured his knee and had a meniscus procedure. So it's going to be, it's tough to tell what he'll contribute and how soon this year. But I don't know that I compare him to Keaton Miles. This young man, 6'6", 6'7", has a lot better ball skill. Mike Anderson compares him to having guard skills at 6'6", 6'7". And I, you know, from what I've seen, I haven't seen him in person, what I've seen on tape, I see that in his game. And so where he played high school, you know, not the best competition. Again, on the grassroots level, he didn't play on one of the major shoe circuits. So it's really hard to tell right now and say what he's going to do this year. But I think he's going to be a nice piece to the puzzle with that second unit in time. How soon remains to be seen.
All right, Kevin, give me about a minute on this one. So Justice Hill signed with the Arkansas Razorbacks. We got a chance to talk to him last week. Really excited about coming up here to Fayetteville. I have one concern with him, and that's his height. He's listed at 5'11". I think I'm taller than him. We've stood next to each other before, and I look down at him a little bit. It's not much, but does that at all concern you about his height at the collegiate level?
Height can play a factor. Justice Hill's very explosive. He's got long arms. He's strong. He's fast. He's got a stop-and-go burst with the basketball that reminds me a little bit of Tremont Waters, who's also sort of a smallish, short, you know, short. When you start talking about height, he's not a guy with any height over there at LSU, but he's, you know, I'm not going to say he's as good as him, but there are some similarities in how they actually use their size to an advantage. Justice Hill has great balance, low center of gravity, but the burst and strength, he's able to really overcome it. I've seen him finish above the rim on big guys on the grassroots level against top-level competition multiple times, and so it doesn't worry me as much as it might with other players that don't have his explosiveness and athleticism.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure. Hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Oh, guys, I love it. Appreciate you having me on and look forward to the next one.